So, you want to start, Adam?
About?
I don't know.
Start.
I feel like
start what?
Maybe Amber wants to start.
I'm not a good. I don't. Yeah, I'm not probably the one you want starting it. I'm a little awkward.
But every week it's me, Adam. Like, I don't want to fight in front of company like my parents used to do.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Right. This is awkward.
This is awkward. I'm influencing with my awkwardness.
Fine. We won't do it this week then.
Okay. Let's just start.
Welcome to episode 266 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is
Adam in Vancouver.
And with us as sometimes, Amber.
Hello, also in Vancouver.
Did you want to say Amber?
I'm Amber.
Okay.
Hi.
I feel like I just jumped on that.
Yeah,
you threw it out there, so I felt like it was redundant.
Well, I felt like, yeah, okay, I don't want to explain, you know, guests on the show, and, you don't have to do all the heavy lifting. Come on, we can handle that. Yes, it's Amber Hughes, who you've heard on the show before. You've hopefully seen her photos, her blog online. If you haven't, that's on you. Go do it now. We'll post a link to it. Adam, don't really care. Amber, what's going on?
Nothing much, actually. It's the quiet season right now, so really it's sort of working on all the things you can't do when you're crazy shooting and editing, getting all my business stuff together. I just recently went to an amazing seminar for wedding and portrait photographers, actually, which, again, you can't really do when you're super busy. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
When you say busy, there's a reason we're talking to you in February.
Yes, there is a very definite reason. Well, literally, once it gets to, I would say, midway through spring all the way through to late fall, that's the busy season for wedding photographers, at least in North America, because that's when it's the nicest weather, especially in Vancouver, because it rains the rest of the time. So you don't want to book your wedding and portraits during that time. So everybody wants their photos taken, and literally you're either answering emails, having meetings, shooting, or working on the photos and delivering them. And it's basically on repeat. And I would say during that time, you get maybe 30 minutes a day to yourself where you can eat your food and kind of slow down, and then you go to bed, and then you start it all over again. So this is it. This is my time to breathe a little easier and actually work on some of the things that I've been meaning to do all year. I need to update my website a bit. I'm behind on my blog posts, you know, that sort of thing. So just do some miscellaneous business tasks.
I always notice that when people's websites get behind, it's either because they're lazy or because they're really, really unlazy.
Yeah. Those are really the two reasons.
Unfortunately, I'm not unlazy, so that's why mine's just stuck in 1978. Yeah.
They had the internet in 78? Sweet.
Well, me and Al Gore used to chat.
Nice. Yeah.
I had that one that you take the phone off the hook, like in War Games. That's a true story. I actually had that modem.
I have a general question for you, Amber.
Yeah.
Now that you have kids, because when we first had you on the show, I mean, you were pregnant the very first time we had you on the show.
Yeah.
And you were already a very established wedding photographer back then. And I was just, this is one of the random thoughts that came into my head when Al said, oh, we're going to have Amber on, was I was curious as to how your wedding photography may have changed, like just from an artistic or stylistic perspective since you've had kids.
Hugely changed, actually. It's funny, like I've always been very passionate about photojournalism and capturing emotions and moments, but I would say that after having Evan, that passion almost doubled. And I've definitely, I would say that that's the area of my photography that I've worked the hardest on lately. It used to be like, I felt like my photojournalism was pretty decent, but I put a lot of effort into portraits. And now, while I do still put in that effort towards portraits, to me, it's the photojournalism and those moments where you're crying with your dad or something like that, that I'm forever pushing myself to get a better, a better capture of that, something even more photojournalistic, more artistic. That's the stuff that I'm definitely pushing myself more for, because I know that with Evan, those are the photos that I love the most. I can have a beautiful portrait of the two of us, but one where he's genuinely laughing and I'm holding him and tickling him or something like that, that means so much more to me, because that's who we really are. And so I would say that's definitely changed a lot. Actually, a part of that is I'm actually starting to do, so I do family portraits, but I'm doing documentary sessions now, which I didn't do before. And literally I go and I spend either a half day or a full day with a family, and I just document them being. So there's no look at me or go sit over here with this light or anything like that. It's literally just me documenting your day-to-day life. But the result of that is that you get this beautiful snapshot of who you are as a family, not just what you looked like.
How was that received with people? Like, is
really
that...
well, actually.
No, the results, really well. I'm not disputing, but do people get the concept ahead of time?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I would say that wanting things captured in a more documentary style has really taken off in the last several years, especially weddings, of course. But then as your wedding clients are moving on from having their wedding and they want to have their portraits as well, that's really well received, because that's what they wanted for their big day as well. So I would say it's definitely a big shift. There's not so much the whole family in white shirts sitting in a field anymore. It's more, you guys running around and being crazy and goofy and, like that way that your kid's whole face just lights up when they smile and like they kind of have that goofy, way that it's kind of lopsided or something like that. Like it, that real, this is who we are. And that's what people want captured these days a lot, I'm finding. So I would say, yeah, that's changed a lot for me that way. And the only other thing that I would say has changed is I always, it was always important to me to get the mom of the bride or the mom of the groom, or dad or what have you, interacting with each other with their kids. But I would say that my emotion towards that and my approach towards that has definitely become more intensified for me. I spend more time on it than I used to. And it's because before I was looking at it as the child. So, oh yeah, the love that's between you and your parents love each other and they love you obviously. And, they've raised you. But now when I look at that situation, I look at the bride talking to her dad before she goes down the aisle, I'm feeling it as the parent. Mm-hmm. And I know what he's feeling. And I know what he's, in his mind, he's seeing her being this, little toddler running up to him and wanting to be hugged and that sort of thing. But that's all playing through his mind. And so I'm feeling that. And I'm definitely, it's definitely changed my approach a bit towards capturing the couple with their parents for sure.
Great. No, I think I have no context from, being into photography before I had kids. So that's kind of just how it started for me and how the interest grew. So I was just curious and the way you say about the family kind of outings and sessions. I mean, I guess because that's how I started with my own family and trying to capture those moments, not posed, but just kind of those moments where mom is playing with one of the kids or both of the kids and everyone's laughing and smiling. Like those are the pictures that I definitely are the ones that go up on the wall. And so when I started doing, portraiture for families, that's just how it always goes, because I never even thought, the white shirts and like you say, in the field. And I always thought it looked just a little too superficial.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've always had some element of documentary to my portrait sessions. But now I'm doing these are pure documentary. Absolutely. Like I'll do one where you guys are looking at the camera, and other than that it is completely documentary. Whereas before I would say it would be 50-50. People wanted to have photos where they were looking at the camera, and there's definitely still photographers out there who will do that. And if that's what the client wants, then I'll tell them, not really my focus anymore. Maybe you want to have a look at this photographer. But for me, I'm very passionate about the more documentary sessions.
Yeah. That's a conversation I've actually had with a number of clients who they see my family pictures and it'd be the same for you, Adam, is because you always have your camera around with your own kids and they see my pictures and go, oh man, we want that. Maybe could we hire you for an hour on a Sunday? I said, not for that.
Yeah.
Like that's not like there's no way I'm hopefully your kid will walk by the window at the exact right moment that the light hits them in that 1 hour that I'm there.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't really work like that. So I'm glad to hear that that people are embracing the half day or the full day documentary session, because that really, to me, that is the best representation of what my kids' photo albums are.
Absolutely. And it's like, it's also too, that gives the kid enough time to relax and be themselves around me. Mm-hmm. Because I find usually within the first half an hour of me being there, they're very like, ooh, who's this person? Mm-hmm. This big camera. And it's kind of this weird situation. And especially too, like if it's one of those ones where you're trying to capture everyone looking at the camera, I find the parents get very stressed out, especially if it's a smaller kid, because they're just worried that they're going to behave and have a meltdown and they're not going to look at the camera. And then that actually, more often than not, that actually causes that to happen. because they're so stressed out, the kid picks up on that and then they start acting out because everything's, you know, this weird tense situation is happening. And so it's just, it's better for everyone all around if we have more time to work with and we can just relax. And I can even put my camera down and like, just be this kind of fun person who's hanging out for a little bit, and then the kid usually will relax and feel a little bit more secure about me being there.
And so for like a half day session, what's the sort of expected delivery, like number of photos would you say?
Well, that's a hard thing to put a number on. Because it really depends on how much we do during that time. So for a half day, I would say I could deliver up to 300 photos.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 12.
No. I could see that happening. I over-deliver. I just put that out there, my confession. I am definitely an over-deliverer. But it's not photos that I feel are secondary to the good photos in the set, if you know what I mean. I only deliver photos that I feel are ones that my clients truly treasure and want.
Yeah.
But I can't hold back things and only give like, you know, the 10 that are the most ultimate amazing. I also give the ones that are like just as amazing, but maybe not like the ones that would go on the blog.
Right. Oh, the B-sides. We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Switching gears a little bit. I actually forwarded this to you, but I read something this week, apparently Brides Magazine, which I've never.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I saw that.
I'm assuming it's a real magazine. Adam, you get it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To the house. Yeah. They basically said, just the story was they said, do not feed your photographer on your wedding day.
Yeah. And their reasoning was that I don't even know where they got this from, but their reasoning was that we weren't one of the vendors that was working a full day.
Right.
Which is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. I mean, we're usually there from the very beginning to the very, very end, yeah, often. I mean, yes, sometimes we do get hired for a shorter amount of time, but often we are there from the bride getting ready all the way to the end of the dance party. And we, unlike, and here's what really got me, is they said that the wedding planner should be fed because they're there all day.
Right.
But we're doing heavy lifting and we're on our feet all day long and we're running around and we're like, we literally don't get a chance to sit down except for maybe when we sit in the car to drive to the next location. Like that's pretty much it.
Yes.
And just the idea that we would not need food after all of that exertion is just, and the other reasoning was that we need to be taking photos while guests are eating. And
which is my favorite part.
Which is my favorite. Yeah, too. Yeah. 'Cause like, I mean, who likes having their photo taken when they're eating? I can't tell you how many dirty looks I've gotten.
No,
during.
I don't do it.
Exactly. And that's usually exactly the way that, that's the way we do it is as soon as the bride and groom start eating, we go get food immediately after. And then that way we can get photos of them mingling with their guests, the ones that aren't eating anymore. And we can immediately be ready for them to continue on with their coverage. Mm-hmm. And then that way everybody wins. You know, the photos don't get blurry and tilty because we've got low blood sugar. You know, that's what you do. And
you don't have to feed the photographer, but you don't have to water your tomatoes either.
No.
Unless you want tomatoes and then you're out of luck.
Now, I actually have it in my contract saying specifically if you have me over the reception or for 8 hours and up, then myself and my second shooter will need to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not want to provide us with a meal, then you need to, then we will be excusing ourselves for up to 20 to 30 minutes so that we can eat our own meal.
Yes.
And that's just understood. And I lay that out to my clients. They are very understanding. All of them, opt to feed us themselves. They're always like, no, eat more. Like they're,
of course they do.
My couples are amazing that way, but and especially if you think about it from the other side, like if you're a bride or groom and you're thinking about it, I mean, would you want to not be fed after 8 hours of being on your feet? Of course you'd want to eat something. So, right. So yeah, it's just common sense, really.
For the bride and groom who are listening, obviously, it's in your best interest to feed the photographer. Forget about Absolutely. The photographer. For your own sake, just feed them. You'll get better pictures.
It's just better for everyone.
You shoot film, right, Amber?
I do occasionally shoot film.
Less and less.
Yeah, it's not something I do professionally. It's more of my own hobby.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's mine as well. I had the worst experience of film ever.
Oh, no.
Ever. Oh, I know. It was to the point where I was going to just run my film camera over with my car. I just processed a roll, and it was just... it was awful looking. It was just everything that could go wrong. And I didn't know what it was. That's the thing. It's so many different things. Turns out, Adam,
mm-hmm.
I got light leaks in my FTB.
Oh no.
Yeah, and which I really should have seen. I should have known. I checked the seals, and sure enough, they're not so much foam seals anymore as they are just like tar.
Oh dear.
So I have to replace those.
That's too bad. I mean, light leaks can actually look kind of interesting sometimes, but...
Not in this one.
No.
This one, like, it was really pronounced over the sprockets, which was what confused me, because generally light leaks kind of look, they can look kind of funky if it's like an old, you know, Holga camera or something like that. But this was really specifically, it was basically the sprockets were extending into the photo.
Oh, weird.
It was very, but I guess where the light leak was coming in was where it would sit on a certain spot. And anyway, so I had a look, and sure enough, the light leaks are gone. So for about $10, I ordered some, the seals are gone. I ordered some new seals on eBay, and they came today. So I have to do the replacement because I do want to keep that camera. I love that camera. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I hadn't realized, I guess I hadn't used it in a while, my fixer was pretty much done.
Oh yeah.
So on top of that, the film just looked terrible anyways.
So you're shooting black and white film then?
Yes.
Or are you doing, I've only ever done home developing with black and white, and I've heard people do color at home, but that sounds like a whole production.
Mm-hmm. You have to have a real good thermometer for that one. Mark does it quite well, but I'm not that interested in temperatures, and so I don't bother. But no, it's black and white, and I guess I just hadn't. Maybe it was cold, and I just hadn't used it in a while, and didn't realize it was spent. But the fixer was no good. So even then, you can go back and refix the film if you want. But for me, there was no point because the light leaks just ruined the whole thing, anyways. But good news is, I ran a different roll through a different camera and with new fixer, and everything's good. So now I'll fix those seals and be back.
Now you can love film again.
it was touch and go where I was like, forget this. I can't be bothered.
Well, that's the thing with film, right? Like you just don't know what's going to happen. That's part of the magic for me too.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when I'm doing client work, that's the only thing that keeps me from doing it. And I know there's lots of photographers out there who do amazing work with film, and I'm so impressed, and I just love it. But I think I would be too afraid that, like, what if
mm-hmm.
there was light leaks happening that I wasn't aware of, and then you've ruined this entire wedding. So that just terrifies me.
Yeah. Well, Adam's pictures look okay, and that was the camera I used for your wedding, Adam.
Yes.
84 years ago, though.
Right.
Or some odd 10-ish?
Almost 11, yeah.
Almost 11, yeah. So back then it was good. The camera was working great back then. So anyways, now I just have to do the fix. That's the part I'm not looking forward to, so... Adam, I'll probably just have you handle it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Did anybody shoot anything interesting this week? Adam?
I shot headshots for my company for a couple of different offices.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I put the one of myself that I hand it off. I didn't ask anybody if I could post them for the podcast or bring that up at all. So I thought, okay, well, to show basically what I did, because between the two offices, they wanted them all to look as much the same as we could as far as the lighting in the background and whatnot. So I did it at two different offices, and I swear when they painted, one of them was my own office, so I know what that looks like, but I looked for a similar kind of backdrop that I could use at the other office, and turns out they painted at about the same time with the same brown walls and in certain spots. So I thought, perfect, I can use that. Mm-hmm. So you'll see the picture of me. So once it was set up, I handed it off to one of my co-workers who isn't a photographer, and just said, please snap a couple of me because I needed my own. Mm-hmm. And there you go. And so basically it's two lights and a reflector. So one flash into the bare flash into the back wall, just to give a little bit of a gradient on the wall, make it an interesting backdrop. Mm-hmm. And then one flash in a softbox, the small little softbox that we have, the Cheetah Stand one, and then gridded and kind of fanned in front of me with a big silver reflector close to the other side of my face, just bouncing a little bit back. So this is the quick and easy portable studio. I didn't really want to bring more than that or worry about setting up more lights. So two lights, really easy setup with the silver reflector. The end. Everything. And the great thing about it is that once that was said, it was just, okay, you know, stand here, okay, smile. And once I got a smile out of each person, like I was just mowing these down, because I had a bunch of people to do at each office. And basically all they wanted, like the company wanted, is like, you know, something decent to go up on the website, but nobody was going to really be staring at it and looking like this isn't going on everyone's business cards and isn't the way we're getting clientele. It's just something for the company to put up. So most of our business comes through doctor referrals and word of mouth and whatnot. So I'm not thinking that that this is really what's going to sell my service, but nonetheless, I was happy with the results.
But did you go ahead and make everyone else look a little bit fat?
Yes, I did that.
That'd be a hot move. Like, oh yeah, I'm pretty buff. What are you gonna do? I can't help it. Awesome. And how many did you shoot in total?
I think it was about 6 or 7 per office. So yeah, 13 or 14. And then I did a few just general clinic shots as well for the clinic, so just to show what the space looks like, because they just sort of said, oh, can you also do a little bit of this? And so they're not huge offices, so again, shot wide angle and tried to make it look as big as I could.
My favorite is when you see the websites that people have done this and just shot with their iPhone, and you think, really?
That's actually my dentist. Random, but I was looking at their website recently, and it's just this awful iPhone photo of them, all the dentists. And I'm just, and it's the thing that kills me about it is that they are super modern, like really high tech dental office, and then they've got this horrible iPhone photos. It's like, oh come on, seriously.
Yeah. I see it with law offices all the time, where you're like, they have so much money invested in the office and in everything, mm-hmm. yet the pictures of the actual lawyers or whatnot they're just awful. So you know that it must not matter to them. Nobody's really caring if that's the effort that's being put on, because real estate agents always spend money on their headshots, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Amber, did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Yeah, actually, I don't remember if last time I spoke with you guys, if I mentioned this or not, but I'm sort of aside to my own business, I've been associate shooting with a local boudoir studio. And
did you
so
say
basically.
Boudoir? Because we talked about that last week.
Boudoir or boudoir? Yeah.
Boudoir. Oh. Yeah. We're not so much on the boudoir, but. Yeah, no, it's great for me as a side business because it complements my work, because I literally get to just go in, I do the photos and I leave, and I don't have anything else that I have to do. So I'm literally just their camera for hire. I'm the creative backbone to their sessions. So I get to come in and just be purely creative and not worry about any of the aspects of running that business, which is fantastic. But because it's coming up to Valentine's Day, I've been doing a lot of boudoir the last little bit. Oh my God. I think I shot 4 ladies yesterday. I've got 6 ladies tomorrow. So that's been me.
Okay.
I don't know where to go with that.
I mean, me neither. I don't know what to ask. You know,
this is, well, this got awkward. No,
are these generally speaking women that want to do this for their husband, or like how does this go generally?
So at this time of year, coming up to Valentine's Day, it's mostly ladies that are doing it as a gift. But I would say actually.
Yeah.
But it's usually for their boyfriend or their husband, or maybe, you know, it's for their fiance. It's really like that's a lot of what we get. But we actually, I would say about 50% of the time, it's ladies who are doing it just for themselves.
That's what I was kind of curious about. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I think, actually one of the best reasons to do it. And it's something that isn't really thought of in that way, but I find the women who do come in even to do it as a gift leave realizing what a gift it was to themselves too. And I think it's because you know, it's hard looking at yourself in the mirror day to day and really having that view of yourself being right. Really glamorous and sexy, and you know, you're wearing your pajamas yourself. And your hair's everywhere. But it's very empowering once you do it, and it's very nerve-wracking going into it. Most women who walk through the door are very nervous, and they're worried about how am I going to look, and will I be able to do the poses and that sort of thing, and how will I look in this outfit? I mean, you usually aren't half naked in front of strangers, right? But it's very empowering when they get through the session, because they just were a sex bomb for an hour, and the photos look amazing. They reflect that. And I think it actually does a lot of positivity for women's viewpoints of themselves. So I think it's a really, it's a very interesting field of photography to be working in.
So you go to their place?
No, we have our own studio.
Oh, okay.
So they all come to us, and we do, well, like, do hair and makeup and get to know them before we get them in there. And then the actual studio is custom built with a few different scenes that they can pose on. So,
right.
Yeah, it's beautiful too. It's floor to ceiling windows. So lots of gorgeous, just natural light in there.
And the guys who live across the street.
Actually, so this is hilarious.
Yeah.
So we're literally across the street from this really nice, actually, do you guys know the Sun Tower in Vancouver? It's the one with the green top. It's that old building.
Not really.
It's near Tinseltown. Anyways, okay. It's one of the older buildings in Vancouver, and it's gorgeous, really historic building. And I've always loved that building. And it's an office tower now, so there's lots of different businesses in there. And the first like month that the studio was open, they were all like pressed against the windows watching what was going on. But now if you look across the street, like 90% of the blinds are pulled down. I think we're too distracting.
Okay.
They're just sick of us now. So
like we've seen it. We know what they're doing over there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty funny.
All right. Photo challenge this week.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we talked about all about hard light. I think mostly about hard light. I think there's some things that we missed, Adam, but
okay.
We talked about why we like hard light so much. So this week's challenge was to go out and use hard light. Now, last week we talked about existing hard light and ambient hard light and creating our own with strobes or a studio light or whatever it is. So the challenge this week was hard light. So why don't we go with the guest first? Amber, let's have a look at your photo.
Okay.
Okay, it's very nice. Okay, let's skip yours. Too good. No, what's going on here?
Okay, so I had this wedding. This was at the Hotel Georgia in Vancouver. And I had my bride had the most amazing dress. I mean, how often do you get a non-white wedding dress? So for me, I was so excited about this red dress, and I really wanted to highlight it. And I knew I wanted to shoot in front of this this wall here with the paintings and that the symmetry with the couch and all of that. And I really wanted something that highlighted her curves and her color of her dress. And I felt like adding strobes to this situation, it would actually kind of kick up like the light on everything. It's actually a very narrow area, so you'd be really picking up a lot of shine on the back wall as well. So I didn't want to do that. So for me, there's a row of pot lights at the top, and all I did was have her pose and lift her chin up so that the light was falling on her face as well, so she wasn't getting shadows on her face.
Well, that's all you did. Oh, okay.
That's all I did.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that pot lights are everywhere. They're, you see them all the time, but people often don't think about them as a lighting source for photography, because it's just, I don't know, it's just part of, they can be very ugly if they're not used right. So yeah, that's all I did, is I just looked for the natural, well, natural, quote unquote, but what was already occurring there, and used it to my benefit. And I like it because it just kind of highlights her in the couch. And then you've got that reflection below.
Yeah. Had you spent 2 hours, you probably couldn't have lit this.
No.
To look like this. And that's, I mean, that's a situation where it's great because this hotel is obviously taking pains to.
Yeah. It's very dramatic.
And I mean, good on you, of course. Like the real skill here is recognizing a good situation. I mean, it sounds easy. Oh yeah, I just put her in front of there and told her to look up. No, you didn't. You recognized a really good situation and said, "All right, here, how can I maximize this?"
That's actually, I think, a big part of photography, like being able to be flexible with your ability to see the light. So not just always looking for soft window light. Mm-hmm. Being able to say, like, to really really be aware and present and actually really seeing the light in all different light situations. And that's where you get some really interesting light.
And this is one of them. I really like, I mean, obviously, you know, her and her dress and the way it reflects, but just the way that the light hits the top of the, I don't know, that's on the sofa, but what's it called?
Chaise?
No, it's something, I don't know, it's something really funky. There's probably a really specific word for that.
There probably is,
because there's no back on it, okay?
Yeah.
Backless sofa. In French, le backless sofa, I think. And so, I like the plane, the plane it creates on the top, and then just falls off very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of whole, that symmetry I very much like. And then with her in reflection, love it.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan of seeing the reflection of the lights on the wood above too. I think that really adds something to it. That was part of what I liked as well.
And what sort of lens are we looking at here?
I think this was with my 35. I'm not sure.
It looks actually wide, but not distorted.
Yeah, no, actually, if you want to know a secret, this is actually two shots that have been compiled into one.
Oh, I invented this method after Ryan Brennizer did. Yes. Yeah. I invented it after him, but without knowledge.
Yeah. But yeah, this was actually because I didn't have quite a wide enough lens for this. I know it was either my 35 or my 24 105. Pretty sure it's the 35 though. Mm. And I did two shots just to get the reflection because I really wanted that too.
Obviously. Yeah. No, it looks fantastic. Adam, anything to add?
I like it.
Nice.
Yes, okay. Adam, let's have a look at your photo.
There you go.
I am not going to fight your daughter.
My daughter, after she got home last night after dance. So we talked a lot about hard light, and I made reference to the fact that I think it, you know, helps in creating definition with muscles. And so I thought, all right, well, I said that, so now let's do something with muscles. Yeah, and so, yeah, I was like, I'm not going to be pumping any iron for this photo. And I appeared in the last week's photo. So I was, I basically said, please, I think I had to pay her a $2. This is now she's more interested in money than anything else. So I was like, $2 for 3 minutes, and so we basically set up a couple of hard lights. So this is three different hard lights, one that you can see creating the light on her face, so sort of back and left, one that's basically from the right side, and then one that's kind of the key light that's kind of forward and just camera right. So three lights in front of our blinds, just because I thought, all right, this is what we've got to work with. I'm not setting up any fancy backgrounds for this. So I used a little bit of a vignetting effect, snooted the light to create a natural vignette, and then just kind of dialed it up a little bit just to sort of make it look like, in my mind, it was like, all right, she's a bodybuilder about to have the curtain pulled and go out on stage. So that's kind of the visual I had. So that's it.
Nice. I speaking of the blinds, I really like the effect with the blinds, by the way.
Yeah, actually, I was. It was kind of driving me a little crazy. I was trying to figure out what was going on with the background.
Yeah,
so, yeah. And
now that I know blinds, I can see that. But I was just like, how does he have this really interesting wallpaper? Like, what's going on?
No, no. And I kind of tinkered with it. When they're too flat, then it looks awful. So yeah. I kind of like just tilted them a little bit so you'd get the obviously the dark in between, because it's nighttime when we're doing this. So yeah, that's all I did, as I just tilted them a little bit. But yeah, I just thought, like, you know, she's a dancer. She's got some pretty good back muscle, neck muscle definition. So I thought, all right, we're using this.
Great.
That's it.
I like the light wrapping around. Like, you look at her right arm. Look at the way the light wraps around both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. That's what I like about this kind of light.
Me too.
Okay. All right. Let's have a look at my son as Superman. Now, this is the one of him looking at the camera.
Okay.
I shot two. The second one will be used later in the episode. So here is a little Superman. Right now is Fasching here in Germany, which is like basically the German version of Carnival, where everyone dresses up, and it's like Halloween here, though, instead of Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone dresses up in different costumes, and so he wanted to be Superman, and so I sewed him a little cape, and then he came home from kindergarten the other day, and I said, all right, I want to grab your picture as Superman. He's a big fan of it now. And so this was the one of the three shots he allowed me to take. He really, really, all right, daddy, done. Like, that's it.
Did you have to pay him $2?
Not exactly, no.
Okay.
No. I actually, this week, it's odd. I made my kids money, like with their picture on it.
Yeah.
So I gave him like $40, but it's really just at-ridge bucks, so nothing you can do with it. Still worth more than Canadian, though, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ouch.
I have a Canadian bank account. I'm feeling it.
Oh, man, it's the worst. Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to shoot Superman, and so this is actually four lights. I brought all four lights out.
Wow.
Yeah.
After last weekend, what happened?
What was last weekend?
Last week, you spent like 1,400 hours and still weren't happy with your photo, and now you went to a four-light setup.
I added lights. Yeah. If just keep adding. It'll get better. Some is good, more is better.
Okay.
No, but I knew going in exactly what I was going to do here, and so I knew I needed four lights. I needed three for sure, and that was one at the back camera right, one at back camera left, just to shape him.
Yeah.
Bring in hard light. And then I wanted to create a little pattern on the background, and so...
Which was what?
You see the light, right?
Yeah, I'm okay. Saying, what did you do to create it?
That's just a flash inside a turned-over laundry basket.
Mm.
That's just throwing that pattern behind him on a dark maroon wall. And then camera left in the front is the fourth flash, which is... I think they're all zoomed to 85 mils. So the front one was zoomed to 805, because it's my EX2 with a snoot on it, just kind of hitting him in the face and the chest. And that's it. And he's standing on a silver light disc, though. Just because the lights, I put all the lights at ceiling level. None of them are down low. They're all coming shooting down. It's kind of how I envision Superman.
Right.
And so they're all shooting down, a little fill coming up because he's standing on the big light disc, the big bounce board. And this is the most heroic pose he could muster. He was not interested in the heroic. I was even kind of showing him, you know, like, hey, maybe flex like Sarah there, but no, not interested. And then legitimately three shots, and that was it. He walked off.
Yeah, all right.
So, great. I'll send you a copy.
I like it. Again, it's cute.
I'm glad he did it, because if he didn't even do the three, it was gonna have to be me again, and that's what happened last week.
Yeah.
And so I, like yourself, was like, come on, please don't let it be me this week. Yeah. So there's that. Anyway, but the point is I need to shoot with hard light more because these are it's four hard light sources. One of them shot, you know, through the laundry hamper, which.
I think that's a really interesting and creative way of getting that pattern on the wall.
I've
so.
Been wanting to use that excuse for a while to shoot that one. Yeah.
I agree. I like the background. That's my favorite takeaway. Like, there's nothing wrong with your kid. He's cute, and you got some nice rim light. But definitely, that's something that I think everyone's got at home. So light modifier that could be used, and it's a really cool looking background. Mm-hmm. Could be used for my next set of headshots. There you go.
Yeah, by all means. And when you do use it, make sure you credit Ryan Brennizer.
Okay.
So there's that. Okay. This week's topic. Now, I did shoot another one, but we'll bring that up. This week's topic is kind of I don't even know how to describe it besides just calling it like the B-sides. I've had this. This may be a term that I may have invented, maybe not. I don't know. But I've been fascinated for the last couple years, really, with the whole idea of the B-side of photography as it applies to music. And if you've never owned a record player. There used to be these things called records, and you can get a 45 with one song on it, and it was the A side. It was the number one song, "Love Me Do" or whatever you know the Beatles sold. And then on the back side, they'd put some other song on that was called the B side. The end.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I mean, I miss records. I don't really miss 45s. Oddly, I kind of miss the idea of the album. But traditionally, now this isn't. Across the board, but traditionally the A side was seen as the commercial hit. The song that the record executives knew was going to move units. It was going to have a universal appeal, you know? And in wedding photography, there are an X number of shots that the bride wants to have. You know, and these are the crowd pleasers. This is, you know, the bride and her father. Coming down the aisle or even afterwards, the simple portrait of the bride and her mother. Like these are the ones that you have to get.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more obsessed with what else happens. The more offbeat side. So like when the artist would put out when the record company would put out the single with the A side, on the back side, oftentimes the artist could put out like a more offbeat kind of honest, sometimes a throwaway. It was seen as a throwaway song. But it would be a more artistic, honest effort and something that the artist would like more. And that's where true art would be created. Now, disclaimer, that is a rather over-romanticized version of what the 45s were.
I think it applies, though. I mean, if you actually look at a lot of modern wedding photographers, the ones that are very... seen as very artistic, and you look at their blogs, that's often what you see on the blogs is actually a lot of B-sides rather than what the typical A-sides are that we do have to capture and we do capture. I mean, I take lots of family photos that are, you know, mom and dad standing with the bride and that sort of thing, but what really speaks to me more is, you know, the way the groom tried to reach for her hand as they were walking away after their portrait session. And those moments are really speak heavily to my heart, and I often... will post them because that's what I love and that's what I want my clients to love too.
Okay, and so how long have you been a wedding photographer?
It's 9 years this year, which is just mind-blowing.
part of what when I try to think back on when I started to develop this kind of fascination with it, and that I wouldn't say it became my focus, because oddly if you focus on it you're going to miss it, which is weird. Mm-hmm. But once I started recognizing it more and more, I look back at my early photos and they aren't there.
No, it's because you're going, okay, what's the next thing that I need to go and set up and pose? Because right. You've got this checklist in your mind. It's really an experience. You've just, you know, you're trying to keep yourself accountable to all the things that you need to capture, and that's what you're focusing on. And I find as you get more and more more experience, you know you can capture those photos in your sleep. You know what they are. I have to get the cake. I have to get their first dance, like that sort of thing. But then you have the ability to then be able to see the other little things that are happening around you. And that's where you get the B-sides, I think. You become more sensitive to it.
Have you looked back at your weddings you shot 9 years ago?
Yes. Yes. I think anyone looks back on their old portfolio and go, ooh, that's a long time ago. But I mean, that's just how it is when you're an artist, right? You're always evolving, and you're always striving for another level. So in 9 years, of course, there would be a huge difference. So,
but looking back, do you see some of those B-side moments, or is it strictly A-side?
There's a couple, I would say. Like, I have always loved that sort of thing. But I'm definitely much more focused on getting the stuff that I need to get that will make mom and dad happy, but then also getting the stuff that's just more emotion and moment and fleeting. And that's, I think, where my clients actually tend to book me for that stuff. So I think that I can definitely agree with B-sides speaking more to the artist's heart. And that's definitely, in modern wedding photography, that's a really prized aspect of it. Is a photographer who can see that fleeting moment and capture the normal everyday stuff in a beautiful way.
When I look back at my early work, I do notice there are those B-side moments. Not nearly as many as there should be or there are now. And not just weddings, but in anything, whether it's portraits or whatever else you shoot, I do find that those exist, but they were entirely by accident.
Yeah.
But I found by looking back on it, you know, a couple of years ago, I recognized that, yeah, that's, I need to kind of pay more attention to that, to allow myself those accidents and then actually do it.
Well, I think also to come across those accidents in your processing and go, oh, hey, like actually recognize that that's something instead of being like, oh, they're not looking or something like that.
Right.
To be able to recognize them after the fact as well.
The other thing, and this is something that just occurred to me this second, that when then oftentimes these B-sides, like, I'll go ahead and compare myself to great music, I don't care. No, but like great music, oftentimes it isn't appreciated right away.
No.
And so with these B-side images, I find that like maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, people can look back at it and go, oh, you know, that was the moment that so-and-so whispered something or whatever it is. And there becomes this appreciation later. But then if you were to go out and purposely, all you did was just go and try to shoot these weird, eclectic things, like create these B-sides, it wouldn't
it would be staged and forced, yeah. You need to let them happen organically, for sure.
Adam.
Yeah.
I want to hear about your B-sides with your kids, because that's where it happens.
I think, again, because I'm not a photographer by trade, and so my context is slightly different than you guys. That's really all I ever cared about. So, I mean, that's why I was interested in photography, was for specifically shooting the B-sides. It was for nothing posed, and I never was really ever considering what the client wanted. And so because that's how I started, when it became, hey, can you do some work for me? My first thought was always kind of to shoot those kind of little moments as opposed to the posed stuff. I felt like I was going the other way. I was trying to shoot those kind of moments first and then the other moments second, again, just because that was always my context. So it's interesting to see how when you're pro first, that I guess that gets flipped around.
When you first started noticing these so-called B-sides, the accidental ones, was there a certain, like, a specific pattern that would show up of when they would happen?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking.
Are
you asking? Yeah, we're done.
Okay.
With you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just checking. Yeah, just
go
checking.
Back to watching.
Well,
better.
Okay. I think my favorite B-sides often happen during the portraits, and that's definitely where I think I first started noticing them. And it, like, this is actually now my approach towards portraits, is I will get people basically into the position that I want them to be in. I can see the light and I can see sort of what would work in this scenario. And we take some photos and then I try to get them to forget that this is happening or that I'm even paying attention anymore. And then that's when they kind of relax and like laugh to each other, or those are the B-sides that I really love. Because it's just them being naturally, themselves with each other. So I think that's when I first started noticing it, is just those in-between moments while we're doing the portraits. It's not necessarily what I initially set out to photograph in that spot, but then it became its own natural thing because I was, you know, we were about to leave and then he just like happens to turn and talk to her or something like that. And just they're relaxed and they're themselves. Mm-hmm. And those to me have always been the images that I find more compelling because it's who they really are to each other. So that's again, yeah.
My first, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
My first realization of it myself was completely born out of a lack of self-confidence in that I knew I had to get this specific moment, the rings or whatever it is. But leading up to that moment, I would take half dozen safety shots in case I missed that moment. I had something to give them. And so oftentimes I would find that those safety images, I'd recognize something and go, oh, that's kind of eclectic. Like that's an odd offbeat photo. I like that one better. And so later on, I would try to then pay attention to those in between moments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's pretty much the way it kind of evolves is you see something in there that you're like, oh, that speaks to me much more than what I was actually trying to achieve there. So,
yes, be careful when you delete, really.
Yeah.
But you can still delete. There's still some stuff that it's okay, that's out of focus and not very good yet. That's not a B moment. That's not a B side. That's one of those songs Prince never released. Just get rid of it. Another situation for me was when I'm setting up the lighting and, you know, if I'm going to do a portrait session or something like that and I'm snapping test shots and something fun happens then. And I think, oh boy, you know, like I'm going to keep, the lighting is terrible, but I'm going to keep that because it's a really genuine moment. So once again, it's kind of born out of a lack of self-confidence at that point. Just, you know, just getting prepped and getting into that situation. Those are my favorite gems. I do find that you still need to shoot the A-sides.
Oh yeah.
Cause they pay the bills.
Well, like I said, you know, I have standard shots that I do get. I don't really push those a lot on my website and my blog. If people ask me to see a full wedding, then they'll see that does happen. I do take those photos. Like, I will definitely take your family photos, no problem. And I do actually think those are very important. But what I try to push when I'm marketing on my blog is the B-sides, the things that speak more to my heart, that are the things that I'm passionate about and the things that really speak to me, because that's what I want to have resonate in my clients, because I want clients who are like me, and what's important to them is important to me as well.
I think generally, like looking at your website, like your blog and the ones that you post, and you do see a lot of those. That's kind of what made me think of about this as an idea for a topic was that, I mean, yours don't look forced. It's not a situation of, okay, here's a regular photo and I'm just going to Dutch the angle to make it look cool. Like no. That doesn't happen.
No, actually, Dutch angles, oh my God, don't get me started. But anyways.
Hey, my dad's Dutch. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, generally, if you look at someone who does really excellent work, I think I would have to assume that they're going to be able to get the basics for me anyways, and the extras are what I'm paying for. Like if you're able to shoot all these great photos, I'm guessing you're going to get the A sides for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they still, I guess you still want to see them.
So Adam, yeah, well, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Adam, can you shoot A sides?
Sure.
Yeah. I think you should invent the C sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what that is, but no, it sounds good.
That's not a
thing. Yeah. Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Good to know. So any advice on how to, this is a question that I don't think can be answered. How do you keep your eyes open for these? And not just in weddings, but just in any basic photography, like when you're shooting your kids, for example. Amber, what would you suggest to people? What to look
well,
for?
Yeah, that's a really hard one because I feel like it's something that really comes with practice. I would say when you're, you know, you've set something aside, I'm going to shoot today, I'm going to document whatever it is. You literally can't let yourself relax in a lot of ways. Like I'm relaxed, don't get me wrong, but your photography part of your mind has to always be going. And even if you're talking to your clients, you have to be thinking, like watching them, observing. And it's really just honing that skill of observation, I think. I always have my camera at the ready. I always have my hand on the camera because I want to be able to lift it up and shoot at a moment's notice. And sometimes it's, you just, you'll see a moment happening and it's almost like I'm not even thinking, oh, that would be a great moment. That thought doesn't even have enough time to get out. I'm seeing it. I'm feeling this is something amazing. Something amazing is about to happen here. And I pull up my camera and I'll shoot a few frames in around that happening and I'll get that moment. And I think again, that comes with experience. You just sort of, you do it enough times that you know what you're looking for.
So when you're shooting something like that, or say like the family at the playground, or like when you're doing mm-hmm. a half day, what camera mode are you shooting in?
Do you mean like
manual aperture?
Oh, manual, 100%. I hate anything but manual.
The same, but that's the very impressive part, because oftentimes when we see these moments unfolding, we grab the camera and oh boy, I'm three stops over and I have to fix that.
So what I do when I'm doing those sessions is I assess what's about to happen. So if, for instance, their little girl is going up to go down the slide, I know where I'm in that time as she's doing that, I'm walking to where I want to set up the photo from. And as I'm doing that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I was just shooting in the full sun. This is going to be backlit. It needs to be brighter. I'm adjusting as I go. I'll take a test shot before she actually gets to the slide and then I'll get the photo. Like that's what I do. And I think that again, that just comes with experience. That's, you know, you have to learn to hone that skill of something's about to happen and then be walking to where you want that photo to be taken from and adjusting your camera at the same time.
Skate to where the puck's going to go, Adam.
Exactly. Yeah, Wayne Gretzky said that.
Yes, he did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. You get there to that point where you know. And again, like when you're doing something like a family session or a wedding, especially, there's basic things that are going to happen. It's got like a basic framework. So you know basically where and when and if dad's about to come in to see his daughter for the first time. So you have at least a second or two to just say, ask yourself, where's the light? Where do I want to be? Do I want anything in the foreground? That sort of thing. Like, how do I want to frame this? Get into your position. And as you're doing that, get your camera set. I mean, I've been doing this long enough now that I can pretty much walk to a spot and know what I need my camera to be set at. I've done it so many times, but that's just repetition. That's, you know, that becomes muscle memory after a while. But the more that you practice with that, the better it will get. And I find if you're on like aperture priority or something, it's going to be just as unreliable. It won't be able to guess necessarily what's going to happen either.
No.
So I think manual gives you way more control that way.
And I'll submit that it's not even so much you have the experience. For me, it's I have failed enough times that I've gotten to the point now where I won't. I mean, hopefully won't fail, but you know, still sometimes you miss by, you know.
Oh, of course. Yeah, a little bit, but that's
sort of a stop. You know, but aperture, or sorry, Lightroom will help you fix that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, it just is just repetition. You just got to shoot and shoot and shoot. And then just becomes second nature.
Yes, that's what's very important, and that's what we try to, you know, preach is a bad word, but preach here is get to know your camera inside and out. So like when Adam, you know, wants to stop down on the aperture, he doesn't have to look at the camera, right?
Correct.
Neither do I, neither does Amber, obviously. It's just all feel now, and if you open up, you know, stop the aperture down three clicks, you know, open up the shutter three clicks, you don't look at the camera. It's that simple. And that's what allows you to catch those in-between moments that are really the ones that you want. And I look through, like, my kids' like photo albums. We make a photo album every year, and 99% of the images are those in-between B-side moments.
Absolutely.
You know, the occasional, I mean, there might be one or two portraits in there just because, all right, you know, I did it. Here it is. But my favorite ones are the ones coming down the slide, or the one I posted 2 weeks ago, Adam, with the sledding incident.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, my daughter went face first over the top of the sled. And no, it's a good photo. Don't worry, it's all worked out fine. And I happened to be ready, and actually I kind of saw it happening, and I was too far away to prevent it, so photographed it. I knew she'd be okay. It was decent. It was semi soft snow, but it ended up being a great photo of her eating it. And all the other parents were like, "Oh," you know, looking around and looking at me, and I was She's fine. It's in focus. Don't worry about it. And so, but it is that experience being ready for it and anticipating. Once I saw it kind of going sideways, I knew what was going to happen. And my priorities were in the right place, and that's that. So there are those reps that you have to do with your camera and in situations. If it's shooting kids on the playground, you kind of know what they're going to do. You can anticipate their behavior and be ready for it. And shoot in between. I mean, fire off three or four, and yeah, you'll be surprised that you might your clients will probably love the in between moments better.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, with the documentary sessions, I've gotten a really good feedback on that. And it's, as a parent myself, I definitely feel that very strongly. I had a documentary session done of us, and I've had portrait sessions before, and I love them. But the photos that I always love and the ones that always speak to me the most are the ones where we're just being completely immersed in each other and having a really good time and being the family that we are. Because that's your day-to-day life, right? And that's what you really want to remember as time goes on is how it felt to be together.
Yes. Agreed. All right, Adam.
Yeah.
Keep shooting the B-sides, man.
All right.
You're the man.
Okay.
All right, Amber, thanks very much for
my pleasure
being on the show. Photo challenge for next week, Adam.
Yes.
It's got to be B-side.
You're going to intentionally try to shoot a B-side.
It has to be a B-side, yeah.
All right, okay.
That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Not really.
Okay. No. Well, look at the pictures on the photographs on your wall. How many of them are posed, like percentage-wise, posed portraits?
I'll have to look. I have one because we just did a family tractor picture with all the extended family in the snow. And so I posted that. So that will change the percentage. But for the most part, definitely B-sides.
Yeah, I'm looking around. I have three portraits on my wall out of 10.
Yeah. So let's say 25%.
Fair enough. Okay. Good to know. So next week, post a B-side. That's the plan.
Okay.
Okay. And Amber, where can people go to find examples of your work?
Well, you can find me on my website at amberhughes.ca, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/amberhughesphotography.
And I urge you to go and check out her photos. If you want to learn how to take photos, go look at her blog. That's a start. That's not going to teach you. But that's what you want to do. I'm going to be very flattering to Amber and probably embarrass her while she's on the show. Go and look at this. This is what you want to strive for.
Well, thanks.
I'm talking to Adam. Go do that.
Yeah. No, I thought you're talking about my website. No?
Sure. I'll edit that to sound better for you then, I guess. Yeah, okay. We can do that. So, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
But just go to Adam's first and then to Amber's. Otherwise, you're really disappointed. And then
you're
disappointed with mine at AlanAtridge.com. And the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find everything that we just talked about, links and everything. Oh, and our Amazon links, too.
Great.
Until next week, for Amber and Adam, get out there and make better photos.